let's talk about something that's just completely absurd. And it's this Groundhog Day kind of cycle that we see play out over and over again in the US. There are things that we want government to focus on, and it's not these culture wars that we see bubbling up.
Truly, the things that really parents are concerned about is, you know, their kids, the economy, crime and public safety, public education in schools, healthcare, taxes, and gun policies. And rather than those things being debated, there's this whole other conversation that politicians keep having.
Exactly. You know, everyday Americans, day in, day out, we're not focused on book bans or bathrooms or trans athletes, you know, these culture wars that are getting a lot of oxygen.
At every level of government, there's these huge wars over those kinds of culture war issues that are playing out because politicians are stoking fear and division. But then there's this other set of people who actually really are focused on the real agenda that we care about. If only there was more of that than these culture war fights.
Right. Because I think what happens is then you kind of think you care because we're being told we care, but we don't really don't care because it doesn't impact us typically day in and day out. It's exhausting.
Oh, very much so. From First Focus on Children, this is Speaking of Kids. I'm Bruce Leslie.
And I'm Asella Chalubi. Speaking of Kids is a podcast that puts kids at the center of public policy.
So as we were discussing, parents do not want a culture wars agenda. They want support and help in making their lives and their children's lives a little bit easier. Ms. Alge, we were talking earlier today about this National Parents Union survey in February, and it really got at some of these issues of what is it that parents really want? So what were some of those findings?
You're absolutely right, Bruce. I mean, I think in this poll, you know, you see across the board, really, on all issues that really matter to children and families, ranging from expanding the child tax credit, you know, 87% of people surveyed said, you know, they really do strongly support the expansion of the child tax credit. You know, when you go into expanding subsidies to reduce pay for health insurance, you know, K through 12 education, I mean, really, these margins, 85% of those interviewed really said that they strongly support these things. You know, even paid parental leave programs to provide up to 12 weeks of paid family leave for families of new parents, of new babies. I mean, 84% of those surveyed said they strongly support initiatives such like these. But again, like we highlighted, you know, we just get caught up in these isolated, polarizing culture wars.
So that's correct. Parents want a completely different agenda. And it's a very comprehensive agenda, as you just walked through, and it's interesting and tough sometimes for child advocates because for other groups like AARP, I think if you ask people, like, what are the big issues for seniors, people would immediately say Social Security and Medicare. And I think it's more complicated for kids because children have a more holistic agenda of needs that, you know, you really outlined and are very apparent in this National Parents poll that we discussed.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, I think we can both agree that some of the things that have bubbled up as it relates to the culture wars, there is a time and place for them and a conversation that should take place. But really, when you think about the lives, the daily lives of families and parents across the country, it's really, you know, this intersectionality of issues impacting kids that are really important, right? Like, you can't look at things in siloed buckets as it relates to kids, like you can, or at least there's not some clear issues that really are centered for children, right? Like there are with seniors. The issues impacting children really are spread out.
Absolutely. And Celinda Lake did talk to us about that in an earlier podcast, I think the second episode, about that sort of our big challenge. But also what she talked about is that kids, kind of their superpower, is that just like seniors and veterans, when people think about who's deserving in society to get supports, kids are right up there with seniors and veterans. People really do not impose a deservingness standard upon children and think that they don't deserve support. People sort of very inherently think, oh yes, we should be helping our kids. And unfortunately, as we've also discussed, is that is not what politicians often do. They're often running around playing in these culture war debates rather than what we need them focused on, which is the real issues that are important to children and families.
And that's why I am just so excited that we have Rosa DeLauro today. You know, she has been a career-long champion for children and just gets these issues. As a parent herself and now a grandparent, you know, she understands the comprehensive needs of children and families.
Yeah, she basically tackles every issue of importance to kids. And so we're really excited to have her on today. And Congresswoman DeLauro is Connecticut's 3rd Congressional District Representative. She serves as the ranking member of the House Appropriations Committee, and she's the chair of the Babies Caucus. She's been a champion for children every single year since our inception of that legislative scorecard, and we are incredibly grateful to her for her leadership and for her efforts to advocate on behalf of America's children, and we're so pleased to have her today. Congresswoman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure.
So while many of your colleagues often treat kids as an afterthought, you have always so championed and put forth kids as a centerpiece of your work. Why have you done that? Why are you uniquely positioned and willing to make kids a focus of your work in championing their needs and interests?
Well, there's a couple of reasons why. First of all, I'm delighted to be with you and thank you. I thank you for the great work that you do and what your focus is. And I was delighted to be able to receive the award from First Focus. It means a lot to me because this is an area, as you pointed out, that's just really at the very heart and soul of what I try to accomplish in my job in the House of Representatives. And so there are two pieces of this. One has so much to do with my own family background. You know, my folks, blue-collar working family, struggled financially all of their lives, struggled to make sure that I had the best of an education, and used their platform. They didn't write omnibus legislation in the way that we do in the House of Representatives, but they dealt with issues that focused on our community, on families, on kids, and the well-being of children. Again, whether there was their education, their health care, their ability to have employment, you know, my folks were always there. And it was about using government to create that opportunity for families and for kids. The other side of this is that, in addition to that, when I had the opportunity and I managed Senator Christopher Dodd's first campaign and then went to work as his chief of staff, now there you are, in which the, if you will, the mother load of legislation affecting children's lives, children and family issues were central to Senator Dodd's work in the Senate. And he would just say, 1 out of 4 Americans are under the age of 18, and there was no caucus. He said, they don't vote. They don't make campaign contributions, but they are our future. So he established the very first Children's Caucus in the United States Senate and chaired the Senate After School Caucus. So I had the opportunity to work with him on all of these pieces of legislation, the first child care legislation since World War II. He authored Family and Medical Leave. The National Head Start Association named him Senator of the Decade in 1990 for his work on behalf of kids and families. The legislation was just so robust and fulsome. Head Start, child care, preschool programs, reduce childhood hunger, lift families out of poverty, provide services for premature infants and children with autism, and protect children from neglect and abuse. So that was his mission. It became part of my mission, if you will, the areas that I had the opportunity to work with him on. So I do credit him. And it was the Children's Caucus, by the way, was a bipartisan effort with Senator Arlen Specter at the time, so that these were issues that Democrats, Republicans could engage in and try to do something about. And so he left a legacy and actually left me with a legacy of working on issues that really made a profound difference in the lives of families and children. And so that has become central to what I do in the House of Representatives today.
Thank you so much. And again, thank you for being here. I actually was born and raised in Connecticut, not in your district.
Where?
A small town called Plainville.
Oh, I know Plainville, sure. Because when I worked for the senator and when I managed 2 of his campaigns, I got to go all over the state.
Yeah. So one area that you have long led on is the child tax credit. You've actually worked on this for as long as First Focus has been around. So for over 15 years. Can you tell our listeners about that work?
Sure.
And how we had the best policy in 2021 that cut child poverty in half, and how we can really work together to get back to that point?
This is so critically important to me. I will just make one correction. I started to work on the child tax credit in 2003. So we're talking 21 years now. Yep. And in 2003, I asked the then chair of the budget committee, John Spratt, if I could introduce the child tax credit in an amendment. And keeping in mind, we were in the minority, so we knew we would lose. But he said, of course you can. I did that. And we did lose on a party line vote. But thus began my journey in trying to move the idea and legislation with regard to a child tax credit. Along the way, had people like Charlie Rangel, Speaker Pelosi, Sandy Levin, and more recently, Richie Neal, people who worked to make sure that we could effectuate a child tax credit. I will just say that when President Biden came to office and there was a meeting in the Oval Office he had with all of the ranking members or chairs of committees and so forth. It was the chairs, I think we were in the majority at the time. So I chaired the Appropriations Committee. I did talk about appropriations at that meeting, but I also, he and the vice president were sitting under the portrait of Franklin Roosevelt. And I looked at the portrait and I said, Mr. President, Franklin Roosevelt lifted 90% of seniors out of poverty with the stroke of a pen with Social Security. I said, you have the opportunity with the stroke of a pen to lift children in the United States out of poverty. And so that it became a part of the American Rescue Plan was, just such an unbelievable accomplishment. And I don't say that in a self-serving way, but that we got heard on the child tax credit and what its ability to lift kids out of poverty. And keeping in mind, for decades, we've wrestled with the issue of how do you address the issue of child poverty in this country? And we found through the child tax credit the antidote, the answer to that. And it simply said it meant its intended goals. I don't know of a lot of federal programs that ever meet their intended goals, but this did overwhelmingly. $3,600 to families who had kids under 6 years old, $3,000 for six and over on a monthly basis, a fully refundable, meaning the families who didn't have any income were also eligible for the credit. And what we saw, 4 million kids lifted out of poverty, hunger cut by over a quarter. The IRS successfully sent 98% of their payments. And for every dollar invested, the tax credit provides $8 in social and economic benefits. So what we're looking at now is data, since that has been pulled, if you will. And we're looking at the poverty rate increasing from 5.2% to 12.4%. Hunger once again going up by 25 or 26%. And the people who said that folks wouldn't go to work, they would buy drugs, that they would dog it, it's just, first of all, it's so demeaning to people who in their lives work so hard. Some of these families work more than one job to make ends meet. The data and the results prove them so wrong. People spent that money on childcare, on food, on maybe a rent payment or a mortgage payment, on school supplies for their kids, on health care. And these are not my statistics. They're Columbia University, a social policy center in that regard. We saw nearly 140% increase in a single year. Millions of kids put back into preventable poverty because this program is no longer there. That I find unconscionable. I said it was an antidote to child poverty, but an antidote to inflation. We got people today who live paycheck to paycheck. They can't make ends meet. Their wages have not increased. They face rising costs, and then they have fewer dollars every month. And the child tax credit is, and I'm going to say is, because we're going to continue to fight for the child tax credit, the most effective tool that we have in the face of rising costs. We want families to get ahead.
Yeah.
We want to get millions of kids out of poverty. We have to bring back an expanded and monthly child tax credit as we knew under the American Rescue Plan. I will make one final comment on that. The tax agreement that was decided in the Senate is not the answer. In fact, what it does, it provides millions and billions to corporations, the biggest corporations, many of whom pay no tax at all. And it provides them with retroactive tax credits. And what it does is provide pennies, pennies for our kids. It's wrong. It's lopsided. That needs to get fixed, which is one of the reasons why I voted against it.
Yeah. I just want to say for our listeners, too, that I consider your bill on the child tax credit to be the single most important piece of legislation for children since the enactment of the Children's Health Insurance Program. And that was in 1997. I really firmly believe that in the last quarter century that your legislation is by far the most important. And it was awesome that we got it in 2021. Everyone needs to know, and everyone should know, that that was, you know, because of you, and that, you know, we're going to fight with you, alongside you, to get this back. This is the goal. This is what we need to do. And as you said, to me, every aspect of the lives of kids is negatively impacted by child poverty. And so, you know, kids' brains don't develop in the same way. They early childhood, their education, their health care, their housing, their hunger, child abuse rates, everything is important to kids with respect to child poverty. And so lifting them out is just game changing.
It is. You know, I recall years ago, Dr. Pamela Cantor did so much work with schools, and she did a study in New York after 9/11 to find out what the impact of 9/11 was on children. And what her data showed was that, yes, 9/11 was an issue, but the issue for kids was grinding poverty and how we needed to turn this around. And I can't say it enough, and I thank you for what you said, and I thank you for fighting, that we can fight alongside one another. But we have an answer. How many to these problems, how many of them do we have answers to? You know, we search for the answers and we search for solutions, and one is right in front of us. This should be the flagship issue for us as Democrats. It should be the flagship issue for any administration to move forward on. That is what I'm aiming to do, to make this the flagship issue that carries us in the next year.
Yeah.
Coming up after the break, we'll talk to Representative Rosa DeLauro about addressing issues that affect children collectively and not in isolation.
Stick around.
Making the world a better place for all children can seem like an impossibly huge task. Some of you may be thinking, I'm just one person. What could I possibly do to make a difference? I'm Leila Nimatala, Vice President of Advocacy and Mobilization at First Focus on Children. And I'm inviting you to join us and become one of our volunteer advocates, whom we call our Ambassadors for Children. Ambassadors are our most active child advocates who raise critical issues with the U.S. Congress and with the administration related to child policy and funding decisions, both for kids in the U.S. and worldwide. But don't take my word for it. We asked one of our ambassadors to share her experience.
My name is Amy Jo Hutchison. I'm a born and raised West Virginian who also happens to be an economic justice organizer, and I'm the founder of a grassroots movement here, Rattle the Windows. What drew me to the ambassador program with First Focus on Children was my lived experience of poverty. As a mother of two, living in one of the poorest states in the nation, advocating for children in poverty is very personal to me. A lot of people see numbers when they look at data and reports, but when I see new findings and reports on child poverty, I see my kids, and I see their friends, our neighbors, and the people who I interact with every day. And I trust First Focus on Children. I have personally stepped into spaces that they've created for parents like me to be heard. What would I tell someone thinking about becoming an ambassador with First Focus on Children? Well, first of all, Very few, if any, huge shifts in the way our country addresses economic justice issues have taken place without grassroots involvement. First Focus on Children has created an entry point for people like me to get involved with this ambassador program. It's an easily accessible way for us to become engaged, informed, and to turn our pain into power. I really hope you'll join them.
So please join us, won't you? Check out campaignforchildren.org/ambassadors on how to become a First Focus on Children ambassador and to link up with our fabulous community.
First Focus on Children is a bipartisan advocacy organization dedicated to making children and families the priority in federal policy and budget decisions.
First Focus on Children moves beyond individual issues to serve a more important role, child advocacy. We educate lawmakers and the American public about the issues facing children.
To learn more about our work and ways you can become an ambassador, go to firstfocus.org.
Coming up on our State of Play, Masalich and I are going to chat with Avery Pakulis. I want our listeners to know that you're actually this amazing on a whole range of issues for kids. And so I just want to highlight a few of those. You have been a leader for children in this country and their families and moms on issues around child care, family medical leave. Obviously, we've talked about child poverty, child health. And you also serve as ranking member of the Appropriations Committee and have centered children in your work there. And also, you chair the Babies Caucus in the House. And so I just want people to know, and that what I would like to ask you is, what are some of your priorities? I know you could go on at length about all of the work you're doing and the array of kids' issues, but like, what are some of your priorities in those spaces, and how can our listeners and us support you in that work?
Thank you. Obviously, I think at this juncture, the child tax credit is the top of my agenda. And I view it as Social Security for kids. That's where we need to go. But some of the other areas that you mentioned, let me just say, is early childhood education and Head Start. This is critical. I view that this should be universal preschool. Why shouldn't every child get the opportunity for success? That's where we need to try to go. The issue of childcare. We watched what happened in the pandemic. You know, women out of jobs, no paid family and medical leave. No parent is going to stay in the workforce if their kid doesn't have childcare. It is really central to our economic success here. You know, and children's health. What I have found, and I put together the Women and Families agenda, we were treating the issues of paid family medical leave, pay equity, child care, etc., as singular issues. They were siloed. The issue is these all come together. They are connected in some fundamental way, and that's the way we have to approach this kind of an agenda. It's not one at a time. It's how we are moving in all of these efforts to create the environment which allows families to succeed economically. Therefore, they have the opportunity to take care of their kids, and included in that is their kids' health, their education, their overall well-being, to be able to grow up healthy and strong. So that, for me, is the combining. That's the way I see these issues, as one piece. And look, I'm going to continue to look at a national standard on paid family and medical leave. Equal pay for equal work. Men and women in the same job deserve, you know, the same pay. Head Start, and we were able to get increases in Head Start in the current appropriations. And I'm going to say, and it does sound self-serving, but I provided, when I was chair of appropriations, the single biggest increase in child care that we have seen in decades. $5.6 billion. Again, these all come together. And I'm going to make this comment to you. When people tell me you can't afford to do these things, give me a break, that this is spending. We have a revenue issue. Let's go after the millionaires, the billionaires, the corporations who pay no taxes, and get that back in revenue so that we can do some of these other things. It is always, I hear about spending as it disadvantages children in the United States and always advantages the biggest corporations and the wealthiest individuals.
You sum that up beautifully. I mean, you know, it's the reason why you're our number one champion, you know, by far. And also, it really does have a deeper appreciation, even for the approach that First Focus has. You know, we work on a cross number of issues. And really, what we've been touting since we've been around is really these issues are not something that you can look at in isolation.
Right.
They have to be looked at comprehensively because they all are interconnected. And with that, with the issues that Bruce outlined, that you just spoke about, the environment we're in, the influence of social media today, with respect to all of that, what keeps you up at night as it relates to these issues?
First of all, I love what I do. I believe in this, the institution of the Congress. I believe in what its potential and what its promises, if you go back to our founding fathers, that its potential is its greatest strength. It doesn't do what you want it to do every day. Some days it does quite the opposite. But when you think about its history of Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, the ability of sons and daughters of working families to be able to get an education through Pell Grants and through what we do in terms of public education, civil rights, a GI Bill, the way in which the institution has transformed people's lives, that's what we need to continue to do for the future. We have a social safety net that Democrats and Republicans coalesced around and said, these are the challenges that our country faces. How do we address them? We need a new social safety net that includes a child tax credit, paid family and medical leave, equal pay for equal work, child care that is affordable and accessible. That's where we need to try to go for the future. And what keeps me awake at night is the institution being hamstrung by some that don't allow us to move forward. And the other piece of this is, and I wrote in the book that I published some years ago called Waging the Battle for the Vulnerable, the Least Among Us, on the child tax credit portion, for me, it was not the opposition to a child tax credit, or maybe even to some of these other programs, but the indifference.
Yeah.
The indifference to the plight of these families, of these kids. You know, folks will go to a school for a ribbon cutting. They'll stand by and so forth. But that doesn't translate into understanding the investment that we need to make in kids. So that worries me about the continued indifference. But it doesn't deter anything that you do or that I do, because we have to keep the issues front and center. And again, my goal is, it's the last quote in the book that I wrote. It's a Robert F. Kennedy quote. It says, I believe that as long as there is plenty, poverty is evil, and government belongs wherever evil needs an adversary, and there are people in distress. So that is what my goal is as I continue on here.
Your words are why we're so incredibly grateful to you for, you know, your constant advocacy. And I guess a question I would have for you then related to that is, we desperately need more Rosa DeLauros in the House and Senate to work beside you to get these things done. And so for our listeners and even for us, any advice, like how can we really move and get rid of this indifference and treating kids as an afterthought by so many in Congress? How can we get more people to prioritize kids and making these investments that are really good for not only them, but for our entire nation and our future?
I think a lot has to do with what happens on the ground at the grassroots level. You know, we did the first video on the child tax credit, which was, you know, historical. We're going to move to the voices of the child tax credit, and that's kids and parents, et cetera, which is something that I'm desperate to do, because there are thousands of stories out there about what happened. But I think that we have to mobilize at the grassroots level so people are telling their stories, that they take that energy and they translate that into action, whether it's political action, but action. And that means getting to the people that represent them. And while it's great to be in Washington to do this, people need to go and visit their congressperson's office and talk about these things. They need to do press around it. Their stories need to be heard. And that is the kind of thing that I believe we have to foster to galvanize. You know, I think my colleagues now in the House, you know, it's no longer indifference in the House where I was speaking about it. Charlie Rangel helped me with that issue. Sandy Levin did, the Speaker did. But now I think that there is a real understanding in the Democrats in the House of Representatives of how critically important a child tax credit is. But we have got to make it relevant to people,
yeah,
to their lives. They have got to understand that this is not just a piece of legislation that's out there or a program that's out there. It has to be shown to how relevant it is to their lives, to the economic security for their lives and their families' lives.
And so, Congresswoman DeLauro, you know, we've given you our Champion for Children's Award for, I think, every single year for over a decade. And, you know, it's not lost on us that this is really hard work and it's tough and it comes with lots of frustration at some points. And we like to ask all of our guests, we've been building a budding playlist for Speaking of Kids.
Okay.
You know, what is your song, your album that really just lifts your spirits when you're having a rough day?
Okay. Well, let me just say a couple of things about that. First of all, my husband and I are great opera lovers, but I won't regale you with that. It goes back to my parents, and I've said about my parents, they struggled financially. When they went to the opera, they did the standing room only seats. And now, because of their sacrifices for me and my husband's family sacrifices for him, we sit in the orchestra, and it really is unbelievable. The other point I would make is my grandkids have taken over my playlist, and so wherever they are, it's about Taylor Swift. But for me, I will just say Proud Mary by Tina Turner.
I love it.
It always motivates me to move, and I've used that as a campaign song for as long as I can remember. Always played on election night in the 3rd District in Connecticut. So
that's awesome.
I love that.
Rolling down that river.
And I can appreciate the Taylor Swift. I have a 7-year-old daughter who has now access to my phone and my playlist, and it's on heavy rotation.
Right.
Well, Congresswoman, we don't want to take up any more of your time, but oh my gosh, we really just want to thank you for everything that you do. And thank you so much for joining us on Speaking of Kids and just for being such an amazing partner to the kid community and First Focus on Children. So look forward to continue working with you. And also just a shout out to your staff. They're awesome to work with
as
well.
They are awesome. They are.
Thank you.
I say thank you to you so much for being partners. And I never take, you know, the wonderful awards as the statement of, you know, it's the end of the line and for past work, but it's about the future work that we will do together. And we really, really are partners in this effort. And I know you'll continue on, and you have my word that I will continue on.
Well, thank you so much.
So on today's State of Play, we have the treat of having Avery Pakulis with us. Avery leads our early childhood and public health portfolio at First Focus. Welcome, Avery.
Hey, everybody. Hi, Bruce. Hi, Sally.
Welcome to the podcast.
So, Avery, you know, today's guest, Representative Rosa DeLauro, is just amazing, right? She's a true champion. You know, we talked a little bit about Connecticut. You and I are both from Connecticut. She represents the great state. And, you know, you've had a unique experience of working with her and then also with Senator Dodd, who have been two true champions for children. And we recognize in our space that that's not always the case. And so in your experience, what has it been like, you know, to work for members that are real champions and prioritize children and families?
I love that question. And it was an incredible experience to work for both Rosa and Senator Dodd. After working for the two of them, it seems like there was no way I wasn't going to focus on kids later in my career, you know, as my career went on. So, you know, I worked for Rosa first. I'm now a constituent of hers in Connecticut, which is thrilling for me to get to vote for her every 2 years now. And then from her office, I went over to Senator Dodd's, and they, you know, they have such incredible love and respect for each other. And you can just see where their work feeds off of each other. The values that they place on the importance of kids and their families and making sure that they are our highest priorities really just pervaded my whole time working for both of them. Throughout their staff, no matter what issue their staff was working on, the impact on kids and families was first and foremost in all of our minds.
One thing that, you know, to me that really stood out too in talking to her for the podcast and also just in all of our dealings with her is that so much of what she does is so aligned with our work. And so can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and why it's so important for children?
Her list of priorities are so closely aligned with ours at First Focus. And I think of the work that we do as advocates from the outside, just complementing the work that she does as an advocate on the inside of the Capitol. I mean, that is truly what she is. On all of these issues, she always truly represents the needs of kids and their families. She never negotiates against herself. She never dilutes what the needs are, even if the dollar figure that's needed is enormous and maybe not realistic. She's still going to fight for that as chair of the Appropriations Committee and now as ranking member of the Appropriations Committee. And so I think that's why Rosa is she and her staff are such an incredible partner. And that's why she's so effective and valuable in Congress. She is consistent and persistent. And those are two words that come to my mind when I think about her. We need her to be out there saying, hey, this deal that you're all making, it's not enough. We need more for kids and families. Because if she's not out there saying that, then we're going to end up with less for kids and their families. And she does that on the child tax credit, on child care, child poverty, pre-K, all sorts of early learning programs, Head Start and others. And, you know, she's able to do on the inside what we try to push people to do from the outside. And to have her there is just a gift for all of us in the kids advocacy community.
Another question along those lines that I wanted to ask you is, as a constituent of hers, how does that play out in New Haven and the work you see going on in the community? I mean, we always say that money matters and making investments in kids is key, and prioritizing kids by policymakers makes a huge difference. And so how do you see that kind of operationalize in Connecticut?
I see Rosa all over the place in the district. So she's in D.C. working hard, but you would think she's in two places at once. She's also here hosting an event with the child care center, actually, that my daughter went to, because they're an incredible child care provider and have been great advocates themselves. She really brings home to the local level the issues of pay equity and paid family leave. And she listens to her constituents. When you see her out in the community, she is constantly listening and talking, doesn't turn anyone away ever. And she's really absorbing the concerns that people bring to her. I mean, when I worked for her, we came up with a lot of bill ideas because of constituents who came to her and said, look, I'm having this problem with my health insurance or my child's health coverage, and I can't get this system to work. I think we need a change. And she listens, and that's how so many of her ideas are formulated. And so I think she's the same person in DC as she is in Connecticut. She is not taking her own interests into account. She's listening to her constituents, and that is just what you see no matter what setting she's in.
And Avery, you bring up a really, you know, great point, and especially in the nature of our work and, you know, building ambassadors and really trying to branch out a little bit more and getting everyday Americans from across the country to, you know, call, email, connect with their elected officials. And, you know, you said it several times, listening and the role of an elected official to listen to their constituents and to voters. Can you share a little bit about the impact that has in terms of, you know, ways that our ambassadors can get engaged and just the vital role that their voice plays in all this?
Absolutely. I think the times when I got to leave DC and go back to the district to learn firsthand from constituents about what a Head Start program looks like on the ground, about what a child care provider is facing on a day-to-day basis. Those are the times when I learned the most, honestly, and truly could start to understand the experiences of people back in the district. And so I think that is a skill that Rosa really emphasized, Senator Dodd really emphasized, and many members of Congress really do pay attention to their constituents because they are voters and they frankly need them to get reelected. But if they're truly doing their jobs, they realize they are there because their biggest job is to listen and then to reflect those needs to their colleagues in DC and in Congress. I mean, I think the role that our ambassadors play is absolutely vital. They have more power and more sway than they may realize. A constituent is so much more likely to get a meeting with a staff member or a member of Congress than someone from outside the district or the state is. And with a member of Congress who is doing their job really well, their voice is so valued and prized. I mean, I think, as I said, so many legislative ideas come directly from constituents. And that is something that I think everyone should know. When an office starts getting a lot of calls on the same topic, people in that office start to listen, and then they start to report that up to their boss and realize, oh, something's going on here that we need to really pay attention to. The role of ambassadors and advocates on the ground in states and congressional districts is absolutely vital to the working of our government.
And if we all did that, we would have a lot more Rosa Doloros in Congress, and it would just be game-changing. Thanks so much, Avery, for joining us and giving us your perspective on both, you know, working for her, but your perspective of being a constituent and how this really all makes a big difference for children across this country. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Avery.
Thank you both so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
This is Speaking of Kids. Thanks for listening. I'm Bruce Leslie.
And I'm Marcella Chalubi. Special thanks to our guests, Congresswoman Rosa Doloro and Avery Pakulis.
Speaking of Kids is a podcast by First Focus on Children.
Elizabeth Windham is the supervising producer, and Julia Windham is the associate producer.
Layla Niematalla is the advocacy and mobilization producer, and the senior producer is Jay Woodward.
Our theme music is Don't Look Twice by Sam Barsh.
For more information about this week's episode, go to firstfocus.org. You can find all of our links in our show notes.
If you have any thoughts, questions, or interest in becoming a First Focus on Children ambassador, email us at speakingofkids@firstfocus.org.
And please follow, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.
Speaking of Kids is produced by Windhaven Productions and Blue Jay Atlantic.